Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed podcast brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 401. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at Eric Cross MLB, and the show is at Tool Shed Pod. Second episode this week. First episode on Monday, the usual time slot. That was with Tim Kanak. So if you missed that, go back and check that out. But wanted to hop on again today as I did last week. And when I discussed my July top 500 prospect rankings update, to go over my July top 500 dynasty rankings update that came out on Thursday. So I wanted to discuss some notable risers and fallers, and also got some listener questions that I'll get into at the end of the show as well. And if you already submitted a question, I'm going to try to get to them all. I'm not sure I'll be able to get to every single one of them. And I'm also recording around 7:15 right now on the East Coast on Thursday night. So if you commented after with your question, sorry, I didn't see it in time. But anything I don't get to in the show, I'll try to at least reply on Twitter so I'm not leaving you hanging. But before I get into all of these fun trending players, the usual housekeeping, if you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. You can find all of my content on Rotoballer or over on my Patreon, toolshedfantasy.com. And make sure you check out all of the great content over on Rotoballer. With Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass, gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your leagues with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league-specific settings. Win more with Rotoballer's lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. Our Premium Pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio. And use the discount code TOOLSHED to get 10% off at checkout. All right, so I'll go over the top 25 overall, like I did with the prospect rankings, and then I'll get into some trending players outside of the top 25. You know, those guys are the studs. You don't need to hear me break down the studs, but my new top 25, in case you missed it, on Twitter earlier today, Bobby Witt Jr., Shohei Ohtani, still in 1 and 2. Those two are pretty locked in, those two top two spots for me right now. I know Witt's not quite as superhuman as he was last year, but still a very good year. He just turned 25, so I don't see any reason to knock Witt out of that top spot. And Shohei is Shohei. Even if he's 31 years old, he's still Shohei Ohtani. So he deserves to be in two. Then I think 3 through 8, I would not have any issue with any of these guys being number 3 or number 8. I think you could order these guys any which way. For me, I have Kyle Tucker 3rd, 4 and 5, Ellie De La Cruz and James Wood, Juan Soto 6, Ronald Acuna Jr. 7, and Corbin Carroll 8. Again, I think that's like a little second tier. A few of these guys after, maybe you can lump into that tier, but that's kind of like a solid 6 for me right there. Tatis and Judge round out the top 10. 11 through 15, you got Paul Skeens, Turek Skubal, Jose Ramirez, Pete Crow Armstrong, who just hit 2 more home runs today to go 25-25, well, technically 25-27, before the All-Star break, was still, you know, a handful of games to go, became the third player in Major League history to have 25-25 before the All-Star break. The other two were Bobby Bonds in 1973 and Eric Davis in 1987. So only three times in history now, and the last of which was, quick math, 38 years ago. That's pretty damn good right there for PCA, but he's having a phenomenal year. So he's in the 14 spot. Gunnar Henderson has been sliding a little bit, but still in the 15 spot for me. 16 through 20, Francisco Lindor, Wyatt Langford, Jackson Churio, Garrett Crochet, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Yes, you know, Langford has not been great. You know, Churio's kind of been down a little bit too, up and down, but you know, Langford, I think, has been a little more down this year, that at least compared to expectations, than Churio has. So I'm assuming most people will probably have Langford a bit lower than this, but I am still very confident in him. Like, the skills are still there. You know, maybe this will come back to bite me, but you know, it also wasn't like a lot of players that were, you know, screaming to get into the top 20 either. Maybe I could have bumped them down another handful of spots if there were some of those players. But a lot of the other players directly below him are either, you know, older by several years or just haven't proven enough to warrant jumping over Langford, in my opinion. So that's why, you know, he's still in that 17 spot, though. That is down five spots from number 12 overall in my June update. And then 21 through 25, you got Junior Caminero, Roman Anthony, Yordan Alvarez, who I'm hoping comes back sometime soon or this season. Who knows with Houston? I have a couple of shares, so I hope he comes back. And then Cal Raleigh, 24, Jazz Chisholm Jr., 25. So the recap, 1 through 10, Bobby Witt Jr., Shohei Ohtani, Kyle Tucker, Ellie De La Cruz, James Wood, Juan Soto, Ronald Acuna Jr., Corbin Carroll, Fernando Tatis Jr., Aaron Judge, 11 through 20, Paul Skeens, Turek Skubal, Jose Ramirez, Pete Crow Armstrong, Gunnar Henderson, Francisco Lindor, Wyatt Langford, Jackson Churio, Garrett Crochet, Vlad Guerrero Jr., 21 through 25, Junior Caminero, Roman Anthony, Yordan Alvarez, Cal Raleigh, and Jazz Chisholm Jr. All right, so first one I wanted to talk about, you know, guy that was in my top 25 last month. Now he's gone from 16 to 32 in this update, since last update, is Jackson Merrill. So that's still a pretty high ranking for Merrill, but he was right up there, you know, with the, you know, right in that Langford Churio tier. But it's been a pretty rough year for Merrill. I mean, he hasn't been bad by any means, but really underwhelming, I think is fair to say. In 256 plate appearances, Merrill is slashing 263, 320, 397, and only five home runs. I mean, the contact skills have gone down. The quality of contact has gone down. Really, you know, he's taken a step back pretty much across the board this season. The barrel rate is still basically the same, a little over 11%. Average EV has dropped from 90.4 to 88.4 miles an hour. Hard hit rate from 43.9% to 37.6%. K rate's also jumped up from 17% to 22.3%. I mean, that's still right around league average, not bad, but still 5% drop there, or increase, I should say. He is walking a little bit more, which is nice, 4.9 to 7.4%. Good to see there. But again, the contact skills have gone from 85.8% zone to 81.6%. Overall, from 79.5 to 72.9. So, you know, 6.5% drop there overall. Chase rate was already high at 34.5%. Now it's 39.5%. So again, none of these, you know, well, the chase rate's terrible, but none of these rates, I guess, are terrible, but certainly just an underwhelming, you know, this overall step back for Merrill. Only the five home runs, only one steal, too. He's still a good runner, but just hasn't been really, you know, attempting any steals this year. He's 1-for-3 after being 16-for-19 last year. So, you know, I don't think he's this bad, but maybe he's also not as, you know, top 15, top 20 good, like myself and I'm sure others had pushed him up to last year. So I think there's middle ground to be had here with Merrill. And I think that middle ground is still a top 50 or maybe even, you know, top 30 to 40 player. That's why I'm still, you know, keeping him in my top 50. Again, at that 32 spot for now. If this continues, he'll keep falling, obviously. but still only 22 years old, and this is still a talented ball player. Like, there's no question about that. So I'm not going to drop him too drastically yet, but he is starting to slide right now, that's for sure. Next guy here is on the rise for without question, Nick Kurtz, going from 75 to 42 this ranking update. And I tweeted this earlier today. I'm not sure how many of you caught it, but you know, I knew, you know, really a lot of those home runs, I think 13 of the 14 home runs he has this season in the majors came, you know, after like a few weeks in. You know, he only had won the first few weeks, and then he kind of got on a roll after he got his feet underneath him at the major league level. But dating back to, let's see, what day was it? May 20th. That's when like the home run barrage for him really started. The at-bat per home run leaders right now, number one, or since May 20th, I should say, number one is Cal Raleigh, one at-bat every 7.9, excuse me, one home run every 7.9 at-bats. Number two, Aaron Judge, one home run every 8.53 at-bats. I mean, no surprise there. Those guys are both on pace for over 60 home runs right now in a fun little home run showdown in the American League. But then number three, at one home run every 8.85 at-bats, is Nick Kurtz. And number four, strangely enough, was Mickey Moniak, which I probably should have included in the tweet. So that would have been fun, but I just tweeted about the top three just to get Nick Kurtz in there. But yeah, Mickey Moniak was four. That's just crazy. But yeah, Nick Kurtz number three, right behind the two biggest bashers of the season. He's ahead of Shohei and other huge mashers. And this shows the kind of power that Kurtz has been having, you know, since really debuting. You know, he always had the quality of contact, but really is starting to find a rhythm now. The K rate has come down, though it's still high for the season at 33%. That has been trending in the right direction. You know, walk rate's 10%, solid there. Barrel rate 16.3%, hard hit rate 48.8%, ex-Wobicon of 500 on the nose, average EV of 92.2 miles per hour. He's hitting home runs on all three pitch types, which is good to see. Contact skills right now are below average. Again, you kind of could tell that from that higher K rate, but those are also trending in the right direction. And Kurtz is one where, I mean, yeah, it'd be nice to see above average contact rates, you know, no question about it, but even if he's just like, you know, 45 grade contact, which would be like, you know, upper 70%, you know, league average is 82%. So if he's like 78, 79% zone and, you know, 70, 71% overall, you know, with his power, that could still be really good things. Like Judge was in that area for the longest time. I'm not sure what Judge is at this year. I think it's gone up, but Judge has never had like super high contact rates. But when you have elite power, and Kurtz does not have Judge power, but he's got, you know, elite power for sure, you can get by. So yeah, I pushed Kurtz up into the top 50, and I believe I have him as my number five first baseman right now. Yeah, behind Vladdy, Alonso, Harper, and Olsen. But you know, those last two, Harper, Olsen, are both actually, Pete's over 30 now too. So three of those guys are all over 30. You know, Kurtz could jump those three. I mean, it's not like a big gap right now. Those other three are at 30, 34, and 35 respectively. Kurtz is at 42. Naylor's right behind him. Those are my top six right now. And the six guys in my top 50 from the first base position. He could leapfrog Olsen and Harper. You know, both those guys are not having great years due to, you know, either injury or just, you know, poor performance, or I shouldn't say poor performance, just non-elite performance. So Kurtz could definitely get up there. He's still only 22 years old. He'll be 22 the rest of the season. I think Kurtz is here to stay as a, you know, top five, top three, or heck, you know, maybe even number one, number two. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I think he's got that upside of if the contact skills can get up to a point where that would warrant, you know, him being number one overall. Yeah, I think that could be an outcome for Kurtz. So I think he's here as a top tier first baseman, annual 40 homer threat, and is hopefully the average is respectable enough, or maybe he's just like a Pete Alonso type. I think that could be in the cards as well, like a 260, 40 type, though Alonso's contact skills have been better than Kurtz has. So it wasn't like a direct skills comparison, just like an overall production comparison. But yeah, definitely buying Nick Kurtz. I'd buy high right now. I think the value is only going to rise, and we could see him top 25 before the end of the season. And next name here, Jacob Mizierowski. I mean, had to talk about him, though. You know, I'm not going to go like super in depth on him just because I already talked about him both, you know, solo and with a guest, you know, several episodes ago. So done some Mizorowski talking, but let's go back when he debuted, and he's now five starts in. I mean, his start the other night, I mean, on Tuesday night was phenomenal. I mean, going up against the loaded Dodgers, who are full of, I mean, what, three future Hall of Famers in that lineup? I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say, I mean, unless something terrible happens, that, you know, Otani's going to be a Hall of Famer, Mookie will be a Hall of Famer, Freddie will be a Hall of Famer. Maybe Will Smith. I mean, I think he's got a puncher chance if he has a good, you know, second half of his career. But then still, like, you know, rest of that lineup is Will Smith, Teoscar Hernandez, Andy Páez, who's been good this year, Conforto, Edmund, and Hyesung Kim. Like, that's a good lineup, a great lineup, 1 through 9. And on top of all that, not only was he facing a great lineup, facing the, you know, the vaunted Dodgers, he was also going up against another future Hall of Famer, a first ballot Hall of Famer in Clayton Kershaw, who's arguably one of the top, what, three or four left-handed pitchers of all time. Didn't seem to faze Mizorowski at all. 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 12 strikeouts, 21 whiffs in that outing. Simply phenomenal stuff. And that one run was a leadoff home run to Shohei Ohtani to start the game. So after that, really, you know, cut that out. After that, it was 6 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 12 Ks. It's just phenomenal stuff. So overall, 5 starts, 2.81 ERA, 0.90 WHIP, and a 34% K rate in 25 2/3 innings. So he's had 4 great starts, and then the one kind of so-so start against the Mets, where he get allowed, what was that outing? 5 earned and 3 2/3. But outside of that, 5 innings, 0 earned, 6 innings, 2 earned, 5 innings, 0 earned, and 6 innings, 1 earned. So only 3 earned runs combined in his other 4 outings. You look at, I mean, the stuff is just, I mean, just watch him for 3 seconds, and it's apparent how nasty the stuff is. It's a fastball that averages 99.3 miles an hour. It's a 132 batting average against, and a 27.5% whiff rate on that. Slider averages 94.4. I'm not sure what the average fastball velocity is for the entire league right now. I'm going to guess it's probably in that general ballpark, and his slider is that velocity. That's, I don't even know how you hit it. 179 batting average against, and a really only a 22% whiff rate on that, which is actually surprising to see. But the curveball, 87 miles an hour, that's a 50% whiff rate. And the changeup, which he doesn't throw that often, but that still has a 44.5% whiff rate, and that averages 92.2 miles an hour. So he's upper 90s, low to mid-90s, and also upper 80s. So a couple different velocity bands there. Obviously, this guy has always been a massive strikeout arm, but the walk rate was what limited him. And that's come down this year, especially the last, was it, 8 or 9 starts in AAA. And it's at 10.3% right now. I'll live with that. If you tell me that Mizorowski will stay right around 10% walk rate for his career, I will be fine with that. As I've said many times before, it's the Freddie Peralta rule. When you have elite bat-missing stuff, you can live in that 10% walk rate range, and obviously Mizorowski does. So I bumped him up to my SP15 right now. And right behind and right next to him is Chase Burns. I think that is maybe not going to be popular because Burns has been, like, you know, good and bad so far. And he had that one blow-up start where he was, you know, possibly tipping his pitches when he gave up, was it 8 runs in an inning or 7? I can't remember, 7 or 8. But don't forget, like, Chase Burns was, for the most part, ranked and valued higher than Mizorowski when they both, you know, kind of debuted around a month ago. So, yeah, the gap is closed, and I think it's a coin flip right now. But don't forget that Chase Burns is still a very, very elite arm. And I think these could both be fantasy aces long-term. I do not throw around that term lightly. And I think, in general, the ace term gets thrown around way too much. But I think it's definitely warranted with both Mizorowski and Burns. They're both on the cusp of being ranked there now, though obviously that's for Dynasty, not for Redraft. But I think they're both potential top 10 fantasy arms long-term. That's the upside we're talking about with these guys. Obviously, Burns didn't get, you know, a huge jump in this ranking like Mizorowski did. But Mizorowski up to my SP15. And that was a jump from 237 to 61 overall. I think it's definitely warranted. I'm so glad I got him in my home keeper league. Really excited about this the future career of Mizorowski. And let's just keep our fingers crossed that those 94-mile-an-hour sliders don't completely just blow out his elbow. Fingers crossed there. Next one here, going over to catcher, which has had a really big shakeup. Like I wrote an article for Roto Baller a couple days ago. I'm kind of going through just mid-season dynasty and prospect rankings articles, you know, providing my top 15 to 20 at every position, both up for prospect and dynasty ranks, and then talking about some buys or sells or holds at each position. So I've done catcher so far, working on first base, which will be out the next day or two. And the top of that catcher spot is kind of taking a big shakeup this year. And obviously, Cal Raleigh is dumping on the entire league right now. But after that, Adley was kind of not great, and William Contreras is down, Leonard Diaz is down. So we get a big shakeup here, and one of the names rising was Hunter Goodman of the Colorado Rockies, and he's now up to my catcher 6 and 144 overall, up from 228 overall this season. And you look at what he's done, he's been either him or Will Smith have been the second most valuable fantasy catcher for this season, behind miles behind Kyle Raleigh. But he's been great. This is coming after hitting 190 last year. So, he was still an intriguing guy because of the power and obviously Coors Field. But, many wondered, will it ever come to fruition? Can he make enough contact? Blah, blah, blah. So this year, 17 home runs in 336 plate appearances, slashing 280, 324, 519. So quality of contact, 13% barrel, 51.5% hard hit rate, 92 mile an hour average EV. That's all elite. That's all top, 20 or so percent of hitters right now. K rate's come down. It's still 26.8%, which is worse than league average, but that's come down from 31.2% to 28.6 to 26.8. That's good to see. But, contact skills are below average, but not terrible. This kind of goes back to what I was saying about Kurtz, where when you have power, you can live with these below average contact rates if they're not terrible. Like they don't drop down to Will Benson range or Joey Gallo range. That's when really becomes a problem. But Goodman is 79% in zone and 68% overall with a 36.5% chase rate. So will that 280 average probably come down? Yes. But I think he can still hit 260 plus, given that the contact skills aren't terrible. And you get the Coors Field Babbitt boost for half of your games. So could he be a 260 and then 30 to 35 home run type going forward? Sure. OBP will be a bit on the lower side. He's never been a big walk rate guy. It's 5.5% this year. So OBP leagues, he takes a little bit of a hit. But I think this guy is in that second tier of catchers now. Cal Raleigh's in tier one by himself. But Goodman's up there with Agustin Ramirez, who I've talked about enough about. Some of these guys I'm not talking about, you're like, oh, hey, this guy had a big rise. Why don't you talk about him? It's because I probably talked about him recently, and I don't want to talk about the same players over and over again. So I'm trying to pick some guys that I haven't talked about recently, and I've talked a lot about Ramirez recently. Obviously love him, but he's another guy that jumped up into that C5 spot. Ivan Herrera's jumped up. Drake Baldwin has jumped up, like all those guys too. Diaz is down. So kind of a new look top to the catcher rankings tier there. So Hunter Goodman up to in the 150 range now, and my number 6 catcher overall. Next guy here, going to the Detroit Tigers, Colt Keith jumped up from 208 to 157. It's not like a massive jump, but I guess it kind of is, 51 spots. Colt Keith, and I honestly didn't realize how good he had been over the last couple of months. He got off to a terrible start this season. I think he was hitting below the Mendoza line at the end of April, if I recall correctly, but really has been, one of the better offensive second basemen over the last really 2 months or so. I tweeted this out yesterday, so the stats might probably have changed slightly since then. But as of July 9th, when I tweeted this out, last 54 games, in 192 play appearances, 308, 365, 552, 14 doubles, 8 home runs, 8.3% walk rate, 18.2% K rate. And this second base spot is not great right now. So I think I have him. I don't think he's top 10 at this position, but I think he's fairly close at this point. Just given, really, it's this position after coming up the last handful of years is definitely on its way back down. Yeah, so he's 157 overall. For catchers, that is my C, second baseman. He's number 14 right now. And a similar range with like Bryce Terang, you know, Brendan Lowe, Brendan Donovan, guys like that. So I don't think he's a top 100 guys. That's why I haven't pushed him up that range yet. Maybe if this continues, he could maybe get up into like that, you know, 7 or 8, 9 range for second baseman. But yeah, he's had a sneaky good last couple of months, and the metrics really support the jump here from Colt Keith. After having pretty underwhelming quality of contact last season, he was a 5.5% barrel, 87.8 average EV, 35.3% hard hit rate. Those are up to 10.8%, 89.9 miles an hour, and 45.1% respectively. You know, all while still keeping that K rate a hair below 20%. He's also increased the walk rate from 6.5% to 11%. And zone contact and overall contact are still above average. 85.7% zone, 78% overall, and only a 22.7% chase rate. So really just above average power, above average contact right now. You know, that underwhelming power is kind of why I bumped him down a bit just earlier this season. You know, wasn't really sure how much he'd impact the ball, if he could even get to 20 home runs. And he's probably still capped in like the low 20s for home runs. And he doesn't really run that much, so he kind of needs to be that above-average hit, above-average power guy to warrant being a guy you consider starting at this position, even with the down state of the position. But I think if he can get to like a 270-20 type of guy, which I think is possible given the underlying, you know, data here, I think Colt Keith could kind of stick in that top 150, maybe get to top 100-ish range, but definitely warranted a jump up rankings into that top 150 for sure.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speed Test. So MLB fans are connected from home to home plate with the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. You can keep up with your teams on the road, overseas, and even off the grid. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Based on analysis by Ookla Speedtest Intelligence data, 1H2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
All right, next one here. Going to Boston. Sedan Rafaela. I mean, I think it gets lost in just like how, you know, the drama of Boston right now. You know, the Devers thing, you know, everything else going on in Boston, that Rafaela has sneaky had a really good year. I mean, he's on pace to flirt with 2020. I think he's just below a 2020 pace right now. But given that most of his home runs and steals have come over the last couple of months, I think, you know, if he keeps up this pace, recent pace, I should say, he could get the 2020 for sure. 12 home runs, 11 steals in 327 play appearances. He scored 52 runs, so on pace for, you know, 85 to 90 runs, 264, 309, 465 slash line. So he, you know, Rafael has really just improved a good bit all across the board offensively. In addition to being, you know, a great athlete, you know, 80th percentile runner and, you know, a phenomenal Gold Glove defender in center field, the bat has ticked up across the board. It's a 13.2% barrel rate this year, 90.9 mile an hour average exit velocity, and a 47.7% hard hit rate. Those are all up considerably, up, you know, around 6% in the barrel, over 4 miles an hour in exit velocity, and nearly 11% for hard hit rate. At the same time, he's dropped the K rate from 26.5% to 19.5%. Love to see that. Zone contact has increased from 75 to 82.3%. So that's right around league average now. Overall contact from 67% to 73.3%. Still incredibly aggressive. It's a 42% chase rate. That is down 4.5% from 46.4, but still insanely high and one of the highest marks in all of baseball. But the fact that the contact skills have taken that step forward and the power metrics as well, very encouraging. He's never going to be a guy that walks a lot. He has a career high walk rate right now of 4.9%. And I've seen a lot of Raffaello. Obviously, he's a Red Sox fan and just a guy that saw him in the minor leagues as well. I never it's going to take a wild like approach shift for him to ever be more than like a 5% walk rate guy. He's always been a guy that's like, all right, I'm going to swing. I'm going to put the ball in play. And I'm going to run wild on the bases. That's always been his mentality. But now that he has the, you know, the better contact skills to go with some better power, I think he can make that work. You know, maybe he's, you know, not more than a 260, 265 hitter. And again, the OBP would be on the lower end. But if you can get like 260 out of him in vicinity of 2020, 80 plus runs, that's pretty good. You know, and that he moved up from, let's see, what was it? 213 to 168 overall in this update. Probably going to lose out on some of that middle infield eligibility he gained last year. But you know, even as an outfield only guy, I mean, I don't want him as my, you know, obviously not as my outfield one or two, but you know, if Rafael is my outfield three, I can live with that. Love him as my outfield four, kind of in that range for me right now. But definitely just good improvements across the board. Only 24 years old. Highly doubt the Red Sox trade him. I think they would trade Duran or Abreu first before they get the Rafael, just given that he's their best defender by a mile and in a premium spot in center field. So I think he's going to be in Boston for the foreseeable future in that good ballpark. His pull tendencies of, you know, I've always said that his pull tendencies could do well at Fenway. That has been the case so far. So I think he's going to be a pretty solid top 150 type player moving forward, assuming that he doesn't revert back into the old Rafaela and those contact skills go back down moving forward. All right, next one here. Got a couple of Atlanta Braves, unfortunately, trending in the wrong direction. Ozzie Albies and Michael Harris II. Been getting a lot of questions about these guys on social media, you know, especially, you know, Ozzie. He just has not been good for the last 2 years. I mean, last year was limited to 435 plate appearances, but 10 home runs, 8 steals, 251, 303, 404 slash line. I mean, not terrible, but not the Ozzie that we had come to know and love over the last, you know, 5-6 years before that. And then so far this year in 387 plate appearances, 221, 292, 312, 6 home runs, 7 steals. Yikes. That is, I mean, he's not in redraft leagues. I consider dropping him, honestly. I mean, that's how bad it's gotten. I mean, I'm not saying drop him in Dynasty, and I still have him as a top 200 guy, barely. He dropped from 101 to 185 this update. Probably could have dropped him even lower than that, but I'm trying not to drop him too low because this is a guy that used to be one of the top at this position. But if this continues, he'll be, you know, maybe even 240, 250 next month. I mean, it's really, it's been a year and a half of mediocrity, and this year it's been even worse than that. I mean, he's never been a big quality of contact guy, but he's down to a 3.1% barrel rate and a 29.5% hard hit rate this year, only a 299 ex-Wobicon right now. I mean, still has a good approach. It's 8.3% walk, 15.2% K. I mean, he's never struck out a lot. Still has the ideal angles, but not hitting the ball hard at all right now. That's really the thing. I'm not, I mean, another reason why I'm not dropping him outside of the top 200 yet. Contact skills are still good. He's still above average both in zone and overall. It's 84.5% zone, 78% overall. That's still good. But it's just the power dipping even further when it was already, I mean, I'd say below average power or fringe average power that was maximized by hitting the ball to the pull side and in the air. I mean, he's been, you know, the last 4 years above a 46% pull rate and above a 23% pull air rate, above 25% pull air rate each of the last 3 years, including 26% this year. So he's always been able to maximize that, but that just hasn't been the case anymore. I mean, when the quality of contact dips to a point where even angles can't really help you anymore, and he's doing nothing as a righty. I mean, the slash line isn't great against the lefties either, you know, as a right-handed batter, but... I'm sorry, I got that backwards. Yeah, as a lefty batter against righties, the switch hitter thing here. You know, so as a righty versus lefties, he's only a 229, 248, 276 slash line, five extra base hits, none of which have quit defense. Now, as a lefty, it's 217, 309, 328, so a little bit better, but at least he has six home runs over there. So it's just not a lot of encouraging things. I think he's still going to be fine, but I do believe the days of Ozzie Albies being a top 100 guy are over. Could he still be fantasy viable? Sure. Maybe a middle infield guy for your fantasy team? Sure. But I don't want him starting at my second base spot anymore. And, you know, if you have him right now and you haven't gotten rid of him yet, I mean, it's kind of hard to do so right now. You got to kind of hold it out and hope he gets hot and then maybe use that hot tick to trade him. But not really that encouraging right now from Ozzie Albies. Next up, Michael Harris. I mean, it's been just as bad. I mean, these two guys both have, I mean, I don't like using OPS at all, so I think it's pointless, but just to put it in perspective, LB's 604 OPS and Harris has been even lower, 545 OPS. He's got a 208, 232, 313 slash line, six home runs, 12 steals, and 352 plate appearances. He's starting to lose playing time of late. I mean, you know, can't really blame the Braves for that. Another guy that just does not walk much at all. It's a 2.8% walk rate. K rate's still in check. It's still better than league average K rate at 20.7%. He's still hitting the ball decently hard. 89-mile-an-hour average EV. 39.7% hard hit rate. Though the barrel rate has dropped from being 10% almost on the nose in each of the last three seasons down to 6.5% this year. Contact skills have actually improved this year. 85.7% in zone, 75.5% overall. Both of those are up from last year, but chase rate has jumped up to 42%. Always been a high chase rate guy, and unlike Albies, he does not maximize it. It's a low pull air rate, higher ground ball rate. So again, like the metrics aren't terrible here. And again, it's still, you know, middle of the road quality of contact. Above average overall contact. So like, I'm not out on Michael Harris, but I'm definitely like something's not been right with him. Really. And last year he was okay, but not great last year either. Kind of similar to the Ozzie where it was like, all right, last year they were, you know, not as good as previous years, but not terrible. But this year it's like they both just fallen off a cliff. Like, the rug's been pulled out from underneath both of them. And maybe they're on the same rug and they both fell down. I don't know. I don't know what's going on in Atlanta. Maybe they use their voodoo magic to have, you know, the best offensive season maybe of all time. And they had a, you know, a higher, what was it, a higher slug or higher? Yeah, I think they had the highest slug of all time for a single season, higher than like the late 20s Yankees. You know, lately it's been, you know, they're a below average offense right now, even though they have all the stud players. So I don't know what's going on in Atlanta right now, but, you know, really rough for Michael Harris. And for Ozzie, Again, Ozzie dropped from 101 to 185, Harris from 124 to 218, and those drops will only continue unless something turns around for these guys over the final, you know, 2.5 months of the season. All right, two more names here that I wanted to talk about before I get into some listener questions. Both these guys, unfortunately, are on the fall as well. Matt Shaw, I think, took the biggest drop in my rankings this month, or it had to be one of the biggest. He went from 92 to 238. You know, Matt Shaw as a prospect was never, you know, the flashiest. He was just like one of those, like some of the parts, just good across the board. You know, not huge power, not huge speed, but I thought he'd be a guy that would just give you a good, steady five-category production, which is why I ranked him as high as I did. But that just has not been the case since he got up to the major leagues. I mean, I'm trying not to, like, totally hit the panic button because it's only been 230 plate appearances. Like, he's still a 23-year-old rookie. We got to remember that. But it's not good right now. 200, 278, 283 slash line, two home runs, 11 steals. So at least he's running. He's at 89th percentile sprint speed. That's good. But the quality of contact is the major problem I have with him right now. Overall contact is actually fine. It's 82.5% zone, 78% overall. I mean, he has a 73% contact rate or higher against all three pitch types. You know, ground ball rate is right around league average. It's not like a ground ball rate issue thing, although he's not pulling that much. But the big red flag right now is that quality of contact. I mean, the bat speed is, you know, bottom 25% of the league. Not terrible, but not good either. But he has a 4.4% barrel rate right now, an 83.2-mile-an-hour average exit velocity, and a 26.9% hard hit rate. And I'm actually, I should have pulled this up beforehand, but I think that might be the lowest average EV in baseball right now. Let's see. If it's not the lowest, it's got to be one of the lowest. Yep, he's the lowest right now by over a full mile an hour for qualified hitters on Savant. And so we're looking at, you know, bottom five are Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Tyler Fitzgerald, Nick Allen. Nick Allen has enough batted balls to qualify? I guess so. Caleb Durbin. So Caleb Durbin is second lowest at 84.4 miles an hour. And then Shaw is down at 83.2. His max is only 107.6 this year. That's not great. You know, hard hit rate of 26.9% is the 11th worst rate in baseball. So, yeah, this complete lack of impact right now at the plate is really hurting him. Do I still think he could be a solid major league hitter? Yes. But this is concerning. And he was never like, never a plus power guy, but he was, I thought he'd be at least average to above average power, like, you know, high teens, low 20s, maybe a couple years in the mid 20s of home runs. So, yeah, you know, Wrigley Field, good ballpark, you know, wind blowing out there in the summer. I thought he could be that 20 ish, give or take, home run guy, you know, with 20 steals. And he's on pace with those 20 steals right now. But the lack of its impact is really, really concerning right now. So I had to drop him right now. Not sure I'd run out to buy low unless the price had really been depleted. But again, I'm not out on Matt Shaw, but this utter lack of power is really concerning right now, for sure. All right, last name for listener questions. Chase Dolander continues to drop right now. He's dropped from 279 to 327 right now. He was a very interesting pitching prospect to discuss in terms of, you know, in that discussion of top pitching prospects, right? He was up there for a lot of us. You know, I know, you know, Clegg and I discussed him a lot here on Tool Shed. You know, I've talked with, you know, Welsh about him, James Anderson. You know, everybody seemed to like Chase Dolander to varying levels. Some loved him, some liked him, but he was pretty highly ranked across the board. But Coors Field remains undefeated. I mean, outside of that one completely random Ubaldo Jimenez year, I mean, Coors Field gets the best of every pitcher, no matter how talented they are. And though we kind of thought that Dolander had enough talent to maybe beat it, and maybe he still will. It's 15 starts in his career. I'm not sticking the fork in him. He's not done. But it's a 6.68 ERA right now with a 1.56 whip. And the home road splits are pretty stark. on the road, you know, it's a 4.25 ERA. You know, not bad. 1.19 whip on the road. At home, 9.37 ERA and a 1.96 whip. He's allowed 46 hits and 34 earned runs and 9 home runs in 32 and two-thirds innings. 18 walks to 22 strikeouts at home. So even though he's the best pitching prospect that Colorado's developed in quite some time, or maybe ever, you know, he still can't beat the Coors Field effect. It's nobody really has for more than, you know, a little bit of time. I mean, Germán Márquez had a little bit of success, but it wasn't really prolonged. You know, this year he's allowing Dolander's allowing a 41% hard hit rate, 13% barrel rate. You know, his xERA is a little bit lower, but 5.49. Not really missing as many bats either, you know, which is not something we're used to from Dolander. He was a big bat mister in the minor leagues. You know, and we know the altitude plays, you know, a factor, you know, with especially with breaking balls. But, you know, he's throwing hard, almost 98 miles an hour on the four seam, curveball in the upper 70s, cutter in the upper 80s, sinker in the mid 90s, changeup in the upper 80s, the very occasional slider. The only one that has a whiff rate above 22% is the curve. Fastball is 21.5%. Curveball is 30.7%. Then the cutter, sinker, changeup are all between like 14 to 18%. He's just not missing any bats. You know, the walk rate's ticked up a little bit in the major leagues. So, I mean, I would love to buy low on Dolander if he wasn't in Colorado, but I can't do that. And I don't think they're getting rid of him anytime soon. They need to develop these guys to have any resemblance of a competent pitching staff. So he's going to be there for the foreseeable future, at least the next handful of years, until he hits free agency. Unless that maybe they trade him. I don't know. That'd be surprising. But I'm betting on him being there for the next handful of years. So I don't know if he's going to be fantasy viable. I hate to say it because he's so talented. I loved him dating back to his days in college, ranked him super high in FYPDs that year. But it's Coors Field, man. It's Coors Field. Cannot be beaten, especially for pitchers. All right, let's hit some listener questions here before I close out the show. Again, had a bunch and wish I could get to them all, but I like to keep the, you know, podcast to about an hour or so. So I'll get to as many as I can here. Let's see. First question here from, and I'm not going to really answer it. Again, I've been talking about just MLB guys. I already talked about prospects in my episode last week. So if you missed that, go check that out. Probably talk about a lot of the guys that were risers or followers there. First question here from Josh. He says, Noah Cameron continues to get results in spite of the low velo. Surely there's some regression coming, but he's looking like a legit big league starter. What do you think a reasonable outlook is for him over the next 2 to 3 years? What's his ceiling at this point? Yeah, Noah Cameron is interesting because he's kind of, you know, become a slightly different pitcher than I thought he would be, given what we saw from him in the minor leagues. I mean, he's a lefty that's averaging 92 miles an hour right now. So it's below average velocity, you know, doesn't get any whiffs on that. It's not a great fastball, but it's only given up a 227 batting average against so far, but a lot of extra base hits, 9 of them so far, 4 of which are home runs. So the slug is 500 on the nose. Woba's high at 353, but he's been able to miss bats with these other four secondary offerings, which he uses almost identically in terms of the usage rates. So the four-seamer is 28.7%, and then changeup, cutter, slider, curveball, all between 17 and 20%. All of which are in, you know, the 81 to 87 mile an hour range, all of which have a whiff rate above 27%. So the fact that he's been able to really mix and match pretty well, I think definitely helps him. He goes to all five pitches against both righties and lefties. That, you know, as people know me, know I love that, especially for a guy that has non-elite stuff and non-elite velocity. But I feel, I mean, this is not a direct player comp, but Mitch Keller range of value, where it's like, you know, top 50-ish arm to, you know, maybe some of these more top 60 to 70, but like, you know, an SP 5 for fantasy. I don't think he's as good as the surface stats are now. And I don't think he's 256 ERA good or sub 1 whip good, but Kansas City has done well with pitching lately. So Got to be confident about that, or feel good about that, I should say. So yeah, I'm not buying this level from Cameron, but I think he can be a solid like mid rotation Mitch Keller, you know, type of arm moving forward for sure. All right, next question here comes from St. Louis Perfectos. Kyle Stowers, legit long-term top 100-ish asset, or keep riding the wave? And so Stowers is one I actually wrote up not too long ago. I forget where I wrote him up, to be honest with you. I can't remember if it was on Patreon or Rotoballer or wherever, probably on my daily cross-examination article. But I am like mostly buying into Kyle Stowers. The power is, you know, really good. 18.7% barrel rate, 52.7% hard hit rate, 91.5 mile an hour average exit velocity. That's one of the best barrel rates in all of baseball right now. If you look at his power metrics, they're all pink or red on the sliders on Savant. You know, and this bat speed is 91st percentile, sweet spot rate's 83rd percentile. You know, X slug is 93rd percentile, which is it's even higher than his actual slug by about 40 points. So I think this could be an annual 30 homer bat, but I don't believe in the 279 average. That's kind of where I'm like the why I said not fully buying in, because I think he's more like a 250 guy and not 279 like he is now, because it's a 28.6% K rate. Well, that is down from the mid 30s range where he was the previous 2 years. Still not good. The 75% zone contact and 66% overall contact. So it's below average or even worse contact skills. You know, the higher K rate, you know, decent walk rate, 9.3%, but I just don't see him being more than a 250 guy. But hey, 250 and 30, that's still a solid bat. And maybe it gives you 80 to 90 RBI as well, you know, 70 to 80 runs. So I think he can be good in the power. Provide solid run production. It's not going to give you more than a handful of steals, but I think the average goes down, you know, and the OBP a little bit as well. So that's why I'm not fully buying in, but I wouldn't say top 100. I think top 150, though, I think is fair, which let's see where I have him right now. I think I got to have him in that general range. Pretty sure I do. Yeah, I have him 158 right now. He's actually one right behind Colt Keith overall. So he jumped from 231 to 158 this month as well. So definitely on the rise, and I think he can be, again, a top 150 or so asset moving forward. This guy also asks, Drake Baldwin versus Augustin Ramirez, who do you prefer long-term? Is Ramirez a catcher long-term, or could he still get moved to first base? And can slash when Baldwin take over more than the 50-50 time share? So I'll hit on these quickly because I've talked about these guys a lot. I slightly prefer Ramirez, though I like both Ramirez and Baldwin. I have Baldwin's top 10 catcher in my dynasty ranks now as well. So high on both those guys. They both have above average contact, good power. Ramirez, that's a tough one because I think the long-term catcher for Miami is Joe Mack, who is approaching, you know, his major league debut. He's in AAA right now. So I think he's the long-term guy behind the plate, but I think Ramirez could get enough to retain eligibility, or maybe that's just me having wishful thinking there. So I love Ramirez. I have some shares of him. But even if he's more of a first base DH type long term, he's still going to be a top 10 guy wherever he goes. He could be top 10 first baseman easily. So, and then as for the timeshare, I think that timeshare is coming to an end soon, mainly because I think Atlanta trades Sean Murphy. They're falling out of contention. I don't think they're going to be buyers this year. And the name I've heard some rumblings about, one of the names they could move is Sean Murphy, which I think it could be a valuable commodity at the deadline. So I think there's a above 50% chance that Murphy's traded. So if he does, boom, there you go. If not, it's probably going to be the same as long as Murphy's there. I mean, unless he's hurt, which obviously he's been hurt several times. I think it's going to be mostly a 50-50 split, unfortunately. Next question here. Who do you prefer long-term in Dynasty, Emmett Sheehan or Joe Boyle? This person also asks, as someone who has been holding Ricky Tiedemann and Daniel Espino, is it time to give up or is there still hope for either? So Sheehan and Boyle, I mean, I don't have a strong lean here either way. I have Sheehan at 267 in this update and Boyle at 293. So they're both, you know, they're about 26 spots apart and both have the upside to cut those numbers in half. I don't know how Tampa Bay is going to use Boyle, though the Dodgers have a lot of guys too. That's the thing. Like, I can't sit here and tell you that either of these guys will be, like, no doubt one of the five rotation arms for either of their respective teams. I mean, they have the talent to be. This, it's not a talent question at all. It's just Dodgers have a lot of arms. We know that they can make three freaking rotations with all the arms they have. That would be better than some of the back end rotations in baseball right now. In Tampa Bay, they got some names too. And you know how Tampa Bay operates. So does Boyle just have a piggyback role right now? It's hard to say long term, but you know, Boyle has dropped the walk rate this year, but which has been kind of the thing that held him back for me, at least in my rankings. Both can miss bats. Both have really good stuff. They have the velocity there. They have the secondaries. So, yeah, I lean Sheehan, but I think both are good buys right now. Just kind of uncertain about the volume, at least in the short term, moving forward for those guys. As for Tiedemann and Espino, I mean, Tiedemann is someone I think you definitely should still be rostering here. Espino, I mean, he's someone in my top 500, but he is, you know, obviously has more injuries and more time missed. So Tiedemann, I still, if he's, you know, leagues where top 200 prospect are rostered, Tiedemann needs to be rostered there. Espino is more like 400 to 500 plus prospects rostered for just upside play. But I think it's, I'm not completely giving up hope on Espino, but I think it's just the odds are against him at this point. I hope so, as I love him. He was one of my highest ranked pitching prospects at one point. But Tiedemann, I think, we definitely should still be held on to for sure. And hopefully he can come back because I'm super high on him, too. To see injuries, man, they always get these arms. Matt asks, what do I do with underperforming guys like Francisco Alvarez, Mark Vientos, Anthony Volpe, etc.? There's no like blanket answer for that. I mean, I'd like to look at the profile of each. You know, Vientos has... I mean, really, all three of these guys have really struggled. I mean, at least you're still getting some surface stats from an Anthony Volpe, but, you know, the metrics aren't exactly great with him. But he's still giving you a little bit of home runs, a little bit of steals. But Vientos is back to the 2023 Vientos, unfortunately. It's like almost a mirror image of that season, actually, which is eerie. And last year, he broke out and was phenomenal, but quality of contact has gone way down, though. It's still a 46% hard hit rate, which is good. So still, he's still hitting the ball hard. It's down from last year. K rate is actually down, though, 5%. That's good to see. And contact skills are actually up. So with Vientos, I think he outperformed the surface stats last year, or excuse me, outperformed the metrics last year with the surface stats. But I don't think he's this bad either. Again, like, the metrics are still good. It's still above average power overall, and the contact skills have improved. They're both below average zone and overall, but they're up around 3-ish%, 2-3% from last year. So I think it's a good time to buy low on Vientos. I wouldn't pay much to get him. Like, I'm not like, oh yeah, go get Vientos. I'm not like rushing out to get him, but I think there's a chance he could turn things around here. I mean, it's maybe not to 2024 levels. Alvarez, you know, I've been lower on him the most for even back to his prospect days. And obviously, he got optioned to AAA, you know, what was that, a month ago at this point? But with him, like, the power's gone up this year. Average EVs jumped 4 miles an hour. Hard hit rate jumped 8.5%. But at the same time, the contact skills went way down. 6% contact rate drop from 79.4% zone to 73.3%, and from 70.4% overall to 64% overall. So not good. I mean, I would take, you know, the 2024 levels from him any day. Yeah, it's lesser power, but at least he was making contact closer to league average rates. Still below average last year, but you can't have the contact rates be that low. Like, the low 70% zone and below 70% overall, that's just really troublesome. I'm not saying that Alvarez will never be fantasy viable, but I think he's going to be limited to being a second catcher in a two catcher format. So yeah, not really looking to go and get Alvarez at this point. Yeah, just never been super high on him. And Volpe, I think this is just what he is. He's a guy that's going to accumulate. He's not going to be a guy that wows you in any one area, especially, you know, with the Savant metrics. You know, right now he's on pace to go like 18-18 or something like that, but it's 217, 293, 391 slash line. Doesn't chase that much. You know, quality of contact is fine, but he's another one where the contact skills have dropped about 6% in zone and about 4% overall to below average marks. He was around league average contact. Now he's below average contact. And given that he's got, you know, okay, but not great power, that's really going to limit him. So he's a guy that'll still give you, you know, 15 to 18 home runs, probably, you know, more often than not 20 plus steals. But you got to wonder, is he ever going to bounce back to being that guy we saw last year? Guy that scored 90 runs. Will he hit high enough in the order to even sniff that, you know, amount of run scored production? Like, I don't know. I think Volpe's a top 200 guy, maybe top 150-ish, just because he'll still accumulate. He's still young, still in the Yankees lineup, but not really a guy I'm looking to target right now in any format. Next one here, a couple other prospect questions, so I'm not really going to get into any more of those. But the last one I'll get into here to close up the show, can you go deep into where you place Jackson Chirio on the list and why? So Chirio is still top 20 for me, as I mentioned. To open the show, he's 18th overall. Kind of wanted to push him down a little bit lower, if I'm being honest. But again, as I mentioned, there wasn't any guys that were like screaming to jump the Langfords and the Chirios in the rankings. So that's why I kind of kept him top 20. And he's been better of late for sure. And he's still on pace for, I think, right around like 25, 26 home runs and steals. He's 15 home runs, 16 steals right now, 61 runs scored. So he's on pace to have more runs this year than last. 260, 294, 452 slash line. You know, with Chirio, power has gone down this year. Barrel rate is still around 7%, which is right around league average. Average EV has dropped 2 miles an hour down to 87.6. Hard hit rate has dropped from 44.9% to 37.3%. Still has a solid, you know, lower K rate at 20%. Walk rate's only 4.5%. Always been a high walk rate guy, but the fact that he's still, you know, slightly either around league average or above league average in terms of, like, you know, contact and zone contact, higher chase rate, you know, the aggressiveness is going to lead to peaks and valleys, more prominent than most. We've already seen that throughout his major league career, his young major league career. He's still 21 years old, which we got to remember. But this is a guy that could go 25 plus in any given season. Would have gotten to that mark last year if he'd played like the full year and, you know, more than 573 plate appearances. This year he's on pace for that. But I think you got to live with the potentially sub 300 or low 300 OBP. And probably guys could be in the 260, 270 range. You know, maybe that means he ends up where Julio Rodriguez is now, which is in the 30s in my dynasty rankings, because J-Rod has some similar characteristics, you know, fun profile, but, you know, aggressive and you know, contact skills, you know, for him aren't that great, but, you know, not as good as Chirios, I should say, but, you know, higher chase rate, just inconsistent guy. So, you know, talent is there. You know, I still have him top 25, top 20 even. But if some of these other guys start proving that they can jump ahead of him, I could see him sliding to like that 25 to 35 range, which is still very good. He's still a guy that you can build, you know, one of your building blocks, maybe not your number one guy, but one of your building blocks for your dynasty team, and still a good, you know, all-around player moving forward. Yeah, you just have to deal with the average being, you know, not great, but still okay, and that lower OBP. But hey, if you get 25-25 and, you know, like 90 to 100 runs, I think you'll live with that for the most part. All right, that's going to wrap it up. Again, check out my top 500 over on my Patreon, which is linked in my Twitter bio, toolshedfantasy.com. And I'll be back with you again on Monday. But until then, everyone take care. We'll be right back.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.